The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
And if you're new, welcome to our Dharma Practice Day. If you are new, let me say that you're joining a series. Every year I do a series of these Friday Dharma Practice Days on some topic, and this year it's the five hindrances. And so we're going through over the course of the year these five, and we've done so far the first two, which is desire, sensual desire, and aversion. And today we're going to do the infamous sloth and torpor. And you know, I didn't think anybody would come. Because the people who don't need it have better things to do than look at sloth and torpor all day. And the people who need it didn't get out of bed. So what we do in the Dharma practice days, each day is a little different, and every year is a little bit different how it's done. But generally, it tends to be fairly interactive. I'll do a little bit of teachings, do a little bit of meditation. And we often break up into groups, and sometimes even into pairs of people, in order to explore and discuss and reflect on some of the themes and topics, the practices that we're looking at. And that's a way of delving more deeply into a topic in a personal way, because it's one thing to hear teachings in the abstract. It's another to apply it to one's own life. And so the idea is to really learn how to apply it and see how it's relevant for oneself and one's own relationship to it. And also, it's a way of learning from each other. And classically, traditionally in Buddhism, in monasteries, for example, a lot of the learning that happens is not from the abbot or the teachers down, in a sense, but happens from peers, peer-to-peer. People have a chance to talk and get to know each other and share each other's experiences and wisdom. So we do a lot of that here on Dharma Practice Days. So that's kind of what's in store for the day. So today, the topic is sloth and torpor. And I want to say a few words about the hindrances as a background for them. The hindrances are sometimes associated with hindrances to meditation practice. But they're also meant to be understood as hindrances to any endeavor that a person wants to engage in. So outside of meditation as well, you want to do something, and then you find yourself wanting to do something different. So that's desire. That interferes. The desire to do something else. Or there might be annoyance or aversion about what you have to do, and that interferes. And then there could be sleepiness can set in. You know, you're quite energized and feel really, really good until you have to do that particular task, and something about that task just is de-energizing, draining, and just suddenly you feel really tired. And it happened this week for me. I had to pick up my son from school in the middle of the day and spend a few hours with him. It was quite nice to spend time with him, but I noticed that at some point, I was reading stories to him on the couch, and I started getting really sleepy. It was actually hard to keep my eyes open. And if I'd stayed at work, stayed here, I wouldn't have been so sleepy. But something about that experience, it was soporific. And then the fourth hindrance is restlessness, anxiety, remorse. And then the fifth one is doubt. So these things can come into play in any activity. So they're really useful to look at because they apply in many different situations, not just meditation. So sloth and torpor classically is the kind of lethargy or tiredness. Draining of energy that interferes with our ability to follow through on what we want to do. So if we don't want to do anything, I suppose sloth and torpor is not a problem. But once you want to try to do something, whether it's reading to your child or sitting in meditation or anything else, sometimes there's a whole constellation of states that come into play that fall under the rubric of sloth and torpor. So it's certainly tiredness and sleepiness, lethargy, resistance, dullness, kind of heaviness. One translation from the suttas talks about the mind feeling like it's drugged. Sometimes it's called, in retreats, it's sometimes called swamp mind. You know, your mind just feels like you're in the swamps and you can't hardly, or really foggy. It's a variety of states. So each one of you will maybe have a different description that works for, under this kind of general category of sloth and torpor. Sloth and torpor is not a particular, those terms are almost quaint. We don't usually go around using those words very much in common English anymore. Maybe they're Victorian English almost. Torpor, maybe a little bit, we use. And so the virtue of being vague, or word we don't commonly use, is we can fill it in better with our own experience of what fits into this category. The opposite, I suppose, of sloth and torpor is engagement. Energetic engagement. So if sloth and torpor interferes in some endeavor, something we're doing, then it's interfering with our ability to be engaged in a clear and energetic way with good energy. So that brings up the whole question of what it's like to be energized, to be engaged in a healthy, good way. And some of that has to do with knowing what to do in practice. One of the causes of sloth and torpor is not knowing what to do. Just kind of just sitting in meditation, for example, and not sure, are you supposed to follow my breath, or how am I supposed to follow the breath, or you know, what am I supposed to do, what's happening, and the kind of lack of clarity sometimes can lead to kind of muddleness, which can lead to tiredness. So, let's start with a sitting now. And so sit upright. Thank you.
When you asked us to look at the three states, I noticed that the state I was in was kind of the middle one, the just right, you know, the middle-sized bear, and it felt really good. I mean, it just felt easy, and it felt like I was. In that state, I was really present, and whereas in the low energy state, and I've experienced that a lot, I feel it's dragging, and I'm away, and not there. And in the high energy state, it's kind of the same thing. My mind is just going, you know, and I'm not there either. But it's like the middle way is just present, and it's easier to be present.
Great, thank you.
I find that when my little squirrel mind that runs around in its little squirrel wheel has a task to do, it's much easier for me to meditate. And I found the last minutes where I was moving from one state to the other very, very useful. Thank you.
Someone else about what happened during the meditation? Go ahead. You go ahead. Go ahead, Anna. You can.
Okay. At the point where you suggested that we notice whether our mind had gone off and what kind of energy might be around those thoughts, my mind had indeed gone off into thoughts and feelings around something that was really energizing. In fact, I had kind of let it do that when I noticed this kept coming up. I thought, well, maybe this is timely and important to think about, so I let myself go there. But the suggestion to bring that energy back, to let the thoughts go, it really worked. The energy came back, and I was able to let those thoughts go, but keep the energy, and I really found that helpful, and I'm hoping to try that again.
Great. Thank you.
When you gave those instructions, I had the image of electricity source as the energy. And with the low energy, it would be like a light bulb just not having it, just being very dim. And then on the high end, it would be just burning out really quickly. And then the middle one was just like, oh, the light bulb's going to last a long time and have sustained light.
Great, sustainable. Someone else, please. What I'd like to do is to get right behind you, Debbie.
I would like to hear about or talk about the anatomy and physiology of breathing that the body does for us, and that the diaphragm does, and the pressures, negative and positive pressures in the chest, and that there is a time when my breath settles down, that in our anatomy and physiology, that's a time for sleep. That the body takes over and we drift away. And so what I'm aware of is when that occurs, where then to bring the energy back. That is it that the energy is low because it's the body's response to just wanting to naturally go into a sleep state. So that's something that I think about a lot when I'm using the breath as my focus. And I think that this topic kind of brings that up more than anything else, that there is a point in my meditation where I can allow my body to breathe me without falling into that sleepy state. And I'm not sure whether that's just because I need more oxygen and that's the time to take a bigger breath and bring the control of my breath back to me rather than allowing my body to breathe itself. So those are the kinds of questions that come up as we're talking about energy and breath. Mm. And
great questions. Great questions. I'm not going to respond too much here right now because maybe later in the day we'll go into more some of these topics. But something like sloth and torpor or dullness can set in meditation when we get calm and concentrated. And there's an imbalance between energy and calm. And then the people often fall asleep during that situation. The breath can get quite calm. And but it's also possible to bring in a kind of energy, especially a kind of mental energy or physical energy, that can keep us quite alert or quite energized, nicely energized, while we're getting very, very calm. So calm, being really calm and being energized are not opposed to each other. And so when there's a really strong concentration, which is almost synonymous with being deeply calm, if the energy is there, the breathing can actually come seemingly to a stop. Now you can't discern that you're breathing at all. There's no need. Need for oxygen drops dramatically, but there's a very sharp alertness and clarity, and there's no tendency to fall asleep. So any meditator who starts developing strong states of calm, sooner or later is going to have to contend with or deal with the dullness that can set in as well, and learn how to arouse a certain kind of mental energy or physical energy to balance that calm. And that's part of the art of meditation. Kim.
I was noticing that during moments of flow or appropriate attention, there are sort of shifts that just happen because conditions are changing, and the mind can respond very easily and in a relaxed way to these shifts that occur. They might, or even outside of meditation, if we need to get up and do something or whatever. In the dull mind state, the tendency is to miss these cues, and they come by, and sometimes I'm aware of them and even just say, I'm not going to do it. Not, doesn't sound interesting. And so sometimes, you know, they have to come several times before I'll get the energy to do something or attend to something appropriately. Whereas when the mind is very agitated, then there's a tendency to try to create shifts that aren't there and say, oh, now I need to do this, now I need to do that. I'm going to make this happen, I'm going to make that happen. And then also missing the natural shifts and cues that come along. So I see the appropriate level of energy as being maximally responsive to what should be done.
Great, thank you.
I was noticing that when you invited us to think about vitality or to experience vitality, that there's a tendency to want to confuse sensation or thinking for vitality.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I came back to just breathing, there was a naturalness. There wasn't the need for all that effort. And then sinking into reflection about low energy states, it seems like the price that I pay for the false high energy state. And there's sort of a muddy or even a resistant quality that, like, I don't want to do any of that high energy stuff anymore. So, like others, I really appreciate the readiness of the middle state. There's just an availability.
The readiness, great. So there's a pendulum that happens with high energy and low energy. One of them is just simply we get exhausted if we swing to being tired, but also there can be resistance. You know, the dullness can be, I don't want that high, something like that. And then the readiness, great term. So I'd like to hear some other words or felt sense experiences of what that middle place is, of clean or clear or healthy kind of being energized. How do different people experience that or know it's happening? And the reason, what I hope is that we'll get a lot of different, very different kinds of descriptions, and not just one, so that we can kind of get a kind of mosaic or get a kind of wide range. So here, Victor.
Let's see. So that middle state, it feels like there is an availability of just whatever is needed for the sit. It's neither high nor low. It's just you're able to engage actively in following the breath or catching when the mind goes or feeling the sensations or whatever comes up. You're just engaged and just there and ready. If there's tiredness and sloth or whatever, there's nothing I can do to pull me out of that. It's just that sitting session that's the way it is. And typically, I'll drift off and, oh, I'm drifting off, get back to the breath, drifting off, get to that. I barely get through a breath to, like, drift off if I'm tired. And then I'll stop and stop struggling with trying to get back to the breath and just know, oh, this is tired, drift off. Come to realizing that I drifted off and going, oh, this is tired. Instead of following the breath, I just sort of feel the sensation.
Great.
And when I'm over-energized, I just know over time it'll settle down. I'll just watch the mind, watch the body.
It just takes time. Great. So thank you, Victor. That was great. But what I'd like to do now is just mostly have descriptions of the middle, mostly a variety of different descriptions of that, you know, available, ready state, or whatever, different ways people experience it.
Well, for me, it's fairly elusive, but when it happens, it's like a brightness, like anything's possible. Like all of a sudden, the colors seem brighter and things seem crisper and clearer. And sometimes that can get me into a hyper state, which where I won't go there because you asked for the middle ground. But it I associate it with happiness and joy because it's rare for me, and I tend toward the sloth end of things, and the world just seems bright with possibility when I have that middle state.
Great, thank you.
Settled or receptive.
Go ahead. I didn't hear.
Settled or receptive?
Settled or receptive. Thank you.
The expression I've been using or feeling in my practice lately is I talk about like my stereo equipment, I'm on standby. So that I'm prepared. Nothing is really happening, and it's not off, but I'm just on standby.
Available, ready, yeah. Standby, available.
Feels really good.
Great.
For me, it's an opening. I feel like things get big inside. I don't know how to explain it, but it feels peaceful, but energetic in a sense, but not too energetic. And I feel like there's this opening, and I love when that comes, but it takes, I don't know, like you said, it's elusive. And when it happens, it's like, you know, I want to kind of cling to it. So, you know, it's interesting.
Great, thank you. It's right behind you.
I think I kind of relate it to kind of a confidence. When the energy feels really even, and accessible. I think a lot of people use possibility, but it gives this sense of confidence. Like, it doesn't matter what happens, I know it's going to be okay and I can handle whatever comes up. And so that, the expansiveness that you're talking about really comes into play. Okay, it's just, I'm ready, which is a really nice place to be.
Great, thank you. Yes?
Okay, so I think I experience it like, it's like a humming along. I think of like a boat on a really smooth water, and it's just kind of going along, and if there's a bump, then it just kind of goes with the bump, but it's not, there's nothing jerky about it. So, and it's this presence with everything that happens, and just being with it, but no jerkiness or reactivity or anything.
Great, thank you.
One thing I noticed in that state, afterwards, during walking meditation, everything seems, or can seem, possibly seem, seeming just very bright, very just deep contrasts of colors and shapes, and just much more vibrant. And it's almost like, oh wow! It's like, oh, you know, things are in bloom or sounds are happening. It's almost overwhelming. It's just so neat.
Okay, great.
For me, it feels very natural. It's not false.
Natural, not false. Thank you. It's nice to get a wide range so that it doesn't have to be one way. It doesn't. Hopefully, as you're listening to this, you don't feel like, oh, I have to be like that now. There's no should here. It's just each person will have a different way of experiencing this, and so it's nice to get a range.
Well, I think when that middle state does come, which comes very rarely, I feel more in control.
More in control.
Because the calm state is basically when I'm not getting anything done.
Uh-huh.
And the hyper state is when outside things are controlling me and I say, okay, I have a checklist, I have to get all this done. Even if I'm just thinking, I have to get all this done. But the middle state is, I know what's going on outside and I'm reacting as I want to react, not being pushed into anything. And I think that's what brings about the joy and the calm and other things I'm hearing people talk about. You feel more confident, more happy with what you're doing because you're in control of what you're doing.
Control, some efficacy. Yeah, beautiful. Thank you.
I find when I hit that sweet spot, it's like the lights come on. I feel light in just about every sense of the word and very open, and it's so hard to sustain.
Thank you.
There's a certain flow or timelessness to it. I notice that when painting, sometimes, and there's a real pleasure, and it doesn't mean that things don't go wrong, but there's a certain equanimity to it, and I think it's a real pleasure in feeling creative.
Okay, thank you.
The quality that I often relate to is a quality of boundlessness. Kind of boundless light.
Great, thank you. Did we exhaust? No.
For me, it's the sense of balance, so that I know that I'm kind of here and I'm not going to go this way or that way. Just I can stay in that
balanced
place.
Uh-huh. Beautiful. Did we exhaust the possibilities? Okay.
How about you?
I think the strongest association I have is clarity. That when there's the middle place, there's clarity, physical, mental clarity. So let's take a break.